Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. This week, we spoke with Dr. Angela Nicholas, whose husband was diagnosed with stage 4 colorectal cancer at 45 and passed at just 50 years old. As an advocate, Dr. Nicholas told us about her journey as her husband's caregiver and why it is crucial to raise awareness around the screening as colorectal cancer is occurring in younger ages.
My husband John was 45, was diagnosed in November of 2013 with just 2 weeks of symptoms. He initially did well with standard of care treatment. We did that with chemo and surgery. When he was diagnosed, he had both lung and liver metastases, and was diagnosed at stage 4 when he was initially diagnosed. So that was standard of care. And then around 2 years into his treatment, no longer was able to receive any change in his disease status and standard of care, and then he turned to clinical trials. And he was in 6 clinical trials. During the last 3.5 years of his life. He lived with cancer. Very heroically, he was an avid golfer. He played golf every single day of his life, pretty much, during his cancer treatment. He was a board member for Fight Colorectal Cancer. was an active member of that organization, and was really a cancer advocate in trying to make sure that everybody knew what the screening age was and how to protect yourself and what your risk was for colorectal cancer. He became very ill in November of 2018, for the next 6 months was pretty ill, and passed away somewhat suddenly in April of 2019. Since that time, I have. We've always a partner with him in his mission, in his perceptions, his responsibilities. So I continue with that. I have taken his board seat at Fight CRC, and I'm the vice chair of Fight CRC now. But just as important is I'm a primary care physician and chief medical officer at a hospital, and I'm the medical director of a physician company responsible for the care of hundreds of thousands of patients in our Philadelphia community. And so colorectal cancer is not only a personal mission for me, but also a professional mission for me, because I feel very strongly that my responsibility is to take care of the members of my community. And one of the things that I can do is make sure that everybody is screened for colon cancer.
And so, after your husband received his diagnosis, how did you kind of use your medical background throughout his treatment and things like that?
Well, it was in the beginning, it was shell-shocking. It was devastating. I think that's a good word to put it. He was 35 years old, diagnosed with colon cancer. And he had he had 2 weeks of symptoms. I mean, it wasn't as if he had been having symptoms for 3 years and moved from doctor to doctor to doctor. I mean, we were very lucky in that. We did not have that experience. In the beginning, I knew where to go to find out, how do I prevent symptoms? How do I treat the symptoms that he has? I could communicate with the physicians that was caring for him in a way that maybe was a little bit different than the average patient could, because I knew I could sort of separate out what was important and what wasn't important for those physicians who were determining treatment plans. As he got into further the world of clinical trials, I spent a lot of time working with the Fight CRC clinical trial funder, was able to sort and filter trials, and then was ultimately able to present our oncologist with a list of, for example, 10 or 15 trials to say these are ones that I think are appropriate, based on his disease, based on our logistics, and based on things that we talked about, helped me narrow it down to the top five. So my, you know, my experience with the trial finder was actually quite, I think my experience as a clinician made it easier for me to use the trial finder, but only because I had a really phenomenal oncologist partner. I mean, he really was amazing. If I would send him a spreadsheet, he'd look at it and then he'd call me and then we'd talk about it or we'd review it in John was in clinic. So I got lucky. I think that our oncologist was really a phenomenal partner and they're willing to participate in the clinical trial world with me and help me figure out if there was a clinical trial that was ultimately right for John. I think, unfortunately, his disease was too aggressive, and I don't know that we really... I think we had some stability on some trials. I don't know that we really halted the cancer for a long period of time, but we feel very comfortable knowing that what the trials that he was in will give us information for the future that hopefully we'll be able to cure colon cancer from his trials. You know, as a caregiver, I'll tell you, I think it's really hard, and when he was very, very sick, when he was in the hospital, the last 6 months of his life, he was in the hospital monthly, sometimes more than monthly, and I stayed with him during that time, and that caregiving time, you know, was really important to me that I was with him, but it's just really, really hard. You know, your world is upside down. You're living in a hospital. You know, your husband is critically ill. John is on ventilators multiple times. And I still, you know, have a job. And, you know, fortunately, I had flexibility in my job to be able to take care of my husband and do what I needed to do. I'm very lucky. A lot of people don't have that. So the caregiving when he was home, I had a caregiver during the day. My mom was a caregiver during the day, but nights and weekends it was me. So I would be working full time, you know, somewhere around 50, 60 hours a week, come home from work, and then take care of him pretty much all night. It was hard. It was really hard.
Absolutely. And so your husband was 45 when he was diagnosed. So that's pretty young, cause, you know, for typical age, you would think. So can you maybe discuss a little bit about the importance of raising awareness of the fact that colorectal cancer is happening younger and younger nowadays, and maybe that emphasis that we should be screening sooner?
Yeah, so over the past couple of years, the data is showing that colon cancer is occurring in younger and younger populations. The data is solid enough that we were able to take that data, partner with the American Cancer Society, and now the American Cancer Society has recommended that, and actually has recommended now that the screening age be moved to 35. And we're starting to use that screening age for our patients and our communities across the country. That word needs to get out. We need to make sure that patients are aware of that. And that's just for average risk, for those at average risk for colon cancer. For those that are at higher risk, if you have a primary family member diagnosed with colon cancer, or you have other familial diseases that place you at higher risk for colon cancer, that number is even lower now. And so you need to work with your physician on what age you should start screening if you haven't already done that. I think that with the American Cancer Society's revising their screening guidelines to recommend anybody over the age of 45 have their screenings. With that came a lot of our insurance companies, and a lot of our insurance companies are covering the screening. The U.S. Preventive Health Task Force is in review right now for their screening recommendations, and that's really important because that's what the primary care physicians really use as their evidence to determine what should we be doing across the country. And again, the payers use that as an opportunity to help them with their guidance on what do they pay for and how do they cover it for their members and their insurance programs. So I think that we've got to get the word out that the screening, which has changed to 35, and we've got to make sure that the patients are aware that they need to start getting screened at 35. We're finally at the point where people are asking about it. I think over the past 10 to 15 years, colon cancer screening has been a taboo subject, but I think we're now at the point where, because of some of the commercials that you've seen on TV for some of the going to colon cancer screenings, I think that's really helped improve the conversation that we've had across the country with physicians and their patients.
Definitely. And since we're talking about screening, what are some available options for patients? I know, obviously, colonoscopy, but are there other ways? I know not everybody loves the idea of a colonoscopy. So are there other options out there for us?
Yep, there's two other options for those that are at average risk. The first is Cologuard. Cologuard is a non-invasive at-home colorectal cancer screening test. It is FDA-approved for those over the age of 45 and older who are at average risk. It's done at home. There is guidance from the company. They will help you if you have questions. They will continue to follow up to make sure that you return the kit. And it is highly sensitive and specific, which means that if Cologuard is positive, there is a very high suspicion that there is an abnormality that, and you definitely need to get followed up with a colonoscopy for that. If it's negative, there is a very low risk that you have colon cancer. And again, that's an excellent sensitive, what we call sensitivity and specificity for a screening test. Cologuard is done every 3 years, which is great, and it's a test that makes the clinicians interested in doing it because you're not chasing after a patient every year. The other test is what's called a FIT test. It's a fecal immunotherapy test. But the FIT test is a test done yearly. It is done at home. It is meant to screen for blood and for blood products, and that will also help identify an abnormality not as sensitive and specific as the Cologuard test. And it is done really, which is hard for patients to keep up with. They think they just had it, and they really had it a year and a half ago.
Okay, and how can we make sure, or at least try to raise awareness so that people are actually adhering to the fact that they should be getting screened?
Well, I mean, that's a million-dollar question, isn't it? I think it's we need to educate. You know, the breast cancer organizations have done an amazing job at educating women on the need for getting mammograms after the age of 30. The recommendations change, you know, sometimes, but for the most part, every woman knows you need a mammogram after the age of 30. We have to get the word out because now it's not just women. You know, colon cancer affects men and women. As a result of that, we need to make sure that the general population is aware that they need to get screened for colon cancer, and we need to do a better job of getting the word out. I think as the age shifts to 45, I think, yeah, most patients are not aware, and so we're off to kind of take care of our little corner of the world. So I talk to every patient now starting at the age of 40 about colon cancer screening and let them know that at 45, we're going to be scheduling it. You know, and is there any reason to think that we should be getting it sooner? It's a nice way to remind everybody, talk to your family members about your risk. Talk to your family members about what's happened to them, because there are some patients that don't even realize they're at high risk. They don't realize that their family member has colon cancer and that they're at higher risk and they should be screened sooner. So I think it's awareness among the population is probably the best thing that we can do, especially as the recommendations have changed from 50 to 45.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @cure_magazine.